to Beyond the Ring, a podcast that covers all things in the stock show industry from the informative to the insane, starring Ryan Rash.
Be the dumpster fire that brings light to the darkness.
And Dale Hummel.
Sheep follow blindly while visionaries carve their own path with eyes wide open.
Now on with the show.
Welcome to Beyond the Ring. This is Dale Hummel along with co-star Ryan Rash.
Hello, hello, hello.
Happy 29th birthday.
Happy 23rd, but that's
23rd. Fine. To one of the only conservative gay people I know. That
right.
Makes it a very special day.
The fact that you're making me work on my birthday is absolutely against the law.
I think you chose this date.
I did not.
Okay. I have current events this time.
Oh, well, that's good. Finally, it's only taking you 3 years.
News. This comes from a friend that I went to college with. Has bombarded me with really good information here the last few days. That's interesting. You're aware.
How do you know he's truthful?
He's pretty. I believe him, and he sends me some clips from different things. But Trump is in Saudi Arabia. You're aware of that?
Yes.
Soliciting almost $1 trillion. Trying to get $1 trillion in investment for the U.S. And $400 million. I don't quite understand that. Do you have a full – they're giving it to the U.S., not necessarily Trump, and it goes
– No, they're giving it to him, and Trump's accepting it on behalf of the U.S. That's what the problem is.
And it goes to his library when he's done, not to the next president.
Correct.
Now, is this going to be – this doesn't become Air Force One. He just uses it for what?
Well, he wants it to become Air Force One because he's very pissed off at Boeing because evidently he commissioned a new plane during his first administration.
Yeah.
And Boeing still hasn't built yet. Like it's still in construction or whatever.
I thought he canceled it because it was going to cost too much.
He did, but then they renegotiated.
Got it.
Yes. And so anyway, and the Qatar man's like, here, I would just mine.
Should we not be concerned that there's something on the plane as far as tracking or espionage or anything?
Somebody wants to give me a $400 million plane. I'm all for it.
Yeah, but you, I don't think that can, I just don't think that can become Air Force One.
Well, I'm just saying I'm going to accept it and everybody else can.
And I'm not opposed to accepting it and doing something with it. I just don't know about the security as Air Force One. I do not know. I'm sure it's very nice. Very nice. Inflation's slowing to one of the slower rates it's been in a long time. Trump makes a deal with the UK. Stock market goes crazy. Trump has China on the ropes.
He made a deal with China and none of you people are happy. Don't know.
No, why. He didn't. He
90 days.
Pause the tariffs for 90 days to negotiate. But I'm with you. It's a good thing. Remember, Trump came out a few days ago saying China's in trouble with the tariffs already. That their cargo ships are sitting there with nothing on them. No, I agree, and I think he's got them in a good place. And
I sent you evidence. You asked the last time we talked on this stupid little thing. I sent you evidence. They've had 40 banks go under.
And many, many cargo ships just hanging out. There's no question Trump was correct. It's going to hit him hard. And I believe he's going for more than tariffs. Obviously, he's wanting to get a handle on the fentanyl, which they did promise to do last time he was in office. And I don't believe I think they lied. I assume he'll hold them a little more accountable. And I would like a clause in there. Would you like a clause in there? Bad behavior clause. If we get tariff deal negotiated, and they become a bad actor like they always are, invade Taiwan, send a spy plane or spy balloon over to the U.S., steal more intellectual property, all these things that they're probably going to continue to do, Trump needs to explain to them, we will pull this deal off the table, tariffs, sanctions, everything goes on, and we strangle you. That's what I would like.
Okay, well, we'll see how that works out for you.
India and Pakistan, nuclear powers, where are they at right now?
I don't know who they were.
Very angry with each other a few weeks ago.
Wait, I thought they had a ceasefire.
That is what I'm getting at. They do. And Trump, I believe, massaged them into the ceasefire. I was unaware that Kristi Noem came to Illinois.
Oh, you missed that.
Maybe she came to push RFK's healthy eating to Pritzker.
I don't know. But I finally did see something where your governor is in the top four to be the next Democratic president.
1.3%?
He's in the top four. He's above Gavin.
Really?
Yes.
We do not.
Very, very, very far below AOC, but he is above Gavin.
That is a sad lineup, isn't it? Who are the other two? Gavin is in
it's
there.
AOC, Pritzker, Gavin, Bernie. Those were the four.
Wow. Wouldn't it be great? I'd rather take Gavin out because he's too smooth. The other three, not electable.
AOC is going to be it. She's it. It's very scary. And I am the most scared.
Wow. I just don't think, she's electable in the general.
See, you say that, and here's my thing. I said this after the last election, and y'all do not listen to me. I think the next time a female gets a presidential nominee bid from her party, they're going to win because the women of America are just going to say, screw you, we're electing a woman, period. And they can because they're over half of the voting.
They do not. The intelligent ones are not going to think that way.
I'm just telling you, I have said this multiple times.
I can assure you my wife will not vote for her.
Well, because you would kill her first.
No, I think there's going to be a large enough portion of the female population that will not. They would not do that to our country.
You keep saying that. I'm just telling you, it's very scary to me.
Trump says he may join the meeting between your little buddy from Ukraine and Putin. To negotiate ceasefire, maybe long-term discussion to get this conflict war over with. Judge Jeanine, did you hear about her?
She is the U.S. attorney for D.C.
And what does she do then?
That means it's like the attorney general of the state of, or D.C. is not a state, sorry, of District Columbia.
I understand. But why does that help us on a federal level?
I don't know.
I don't know how it impacts the White House. I understand that she's a district attorney for the people that live in the District of Columbia. I get that, but I don't know how that interacts with the White House and so forth. I'm assuming it does, or she wouldn't have done it, or wouldn't have appointed her to that. I do not know. Speaking of that, Letitia James, investigated by the FBI. Remember our New York attorney that we love so much?
Mm-hmm. No, you love her.
Mortgage fraud.
It's a lot.
Can they hang somebody for mortgage fraud?
I don't.
I hope. Any news or did you hear about the executive order on the lowering U.S. drug cost?
Yes, by 90-something%.
Thoughts on that?
If it works, it's great.
Well, do you not think it's bullshit that we are, as U.S. citizens, paying for all the research, all the expense, covering 80% of the expense compared to the rest of the world? And then we get charged significantly more for those same drugs than somebody in any other country. That's crap. And Trump's going to fix this one. He's calling them out. That is why we buy drugs from Mexico. We buy drugs from somewhere else because they're sold much cheaper to them than what they're sold here in this country. And that is not good. I understand maybe third world countries where they simply can't afford the drugs. I'm good with that. What about the developed countries that can or in a situation is similar to ours that they can afford them, where we have people here basically struggling? They can't afford their drugs, selling everything they have to pay for the medications. Or what about the insurance premiums that we're dealing with because insurance costs for prescription drugs are so high in the U.S.? It's all crap. We do not need to carry the rest of the world in terms of pharmaceutical development and the cost of such. I'm out. I'm with Trump 100% on that. Absolutely. Can he get it fixed? Will executive order hold? I don't know. I believe he's trying to push it through legislation. You know what happens when you push something through legislation against Big Pharma?
Their lobbyists probably go into overdrive.
they throw a little more money at it and it doesn't get done. It's crap. Absolute crap. It's kind of got under my skin just a little bit. Do you want to know the good news? The best news, even better than your 23rd birthday.
Mm-hmm. What?
Shortly after this episode drops, Chase and I will be out of service area.
Yes, I'm very well aware.
And that's why we're going to try to record another one sometime this week. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. What else do you have? That's a lot of current events for me.
You have missed the most important thing that's happened.
Go ahead.
We have a Pope from Chicago.
I was concerned about that, actually. I am not a Chicago kind of fan.
So you just don't mention it?
Yes.
Because you're concerned, you're just not going to mention it. Okay.
I just
the first American Pope in the history of the world, we're not going to mention it. It's fine.
I'm sure he's a great person. I'm anti-Chicago. How's that? I'd rather they were from, where are you at in Louisiana? New Orleans. I'd rather the Pope was from New Orleans today.
His brother lives in Florida. He's a very cool guy. He's given all kinds of interviews.
Really? See, I have not seen any of that.
That's because you heard Chicago and you just...
I've
Republican.
From Chicago. Lucky he survived up there. Just saying. I'm still pushing to get... There's several counties along the state line in Indiana that are going to be incorporated into Indiana. That's my goal still, to get incorporated into the state of Indiana. After I offended everybody in Illinois and the East Coast of U.S. and Canada last week.
At some point. It may be one that we had to pre-record because you're going on your debt trip to Africa.
It might have been that one, yeah. Maybe I bought some time maybe on that one.
Maybe.
Well, once again, a big thank you to ShowFresh H2O. This is the only product out there that completely eliminates chlorine from drinking water, keeping your animals hydrated and ready to hit the show ring. If you want to feel better about your purchase, this product is made right here in America by good people. You can pre-order ShowFresh H2O now at your local farm store, your favorite show supply trailer, or head over to SwampFox.com. It's back, Ryan. It's back. Minor breed racism, back by popular demand. You did the research. When did we do this one?
It was in like episode 63.
200
plus. 200 episodes ago.
Well, please.
This can't do it again. No.
I'm okay with it.
Absolutely not.
I recall having done it once, and there's nothing wrong with doing it again. It needs to be addressed. Has it changed since that episode?
No.
We have not gotten better. So the episode did no good.
No, zero.
Let's try it again. Give us your best justification or best rationale to help the minor breed.
I don't understand why. First off, I don't understand how they were labeled minor breeds to begin with. I don't get that. I don't understand it.
I think it's very simple. There wasn't as many numbers. They become a minor breed.
Okay. So, no, that is bullshit.
I'm telling you how it got labeled that. I'm not telling you that I'm the one that labeled them.
Angus have more registrations than anything in the history of the world, and Angus is considered a minor breed in steer shows.
I don't consider that a minor breed. If it's a minor breed in a steer show, it's because there's not many at the show. So it becomes a minor breed. It's just a matter of numbers.
So you're saying Angus is not a minor breed in a steer show, then you've never attended one.
No, I'm saying
how many Anguses win one?
They have won, not very many, but they have. I can remember an Angus winning the Illinois State Fair.
Grand overall.
Yes.
It's not that stupid Land of Lincoln bullshit.
No, grand overall. It was a long time ago. And I could tell you who's judging, but that would help make your case, so I will not.
I probably don't even know who the hell it is. So,
I believe it was Miles McKee.
Oh,
you remember Miles?
We're not going to talk. Isn't he dead?
I don't know. But I maybe there's been one since then, but that was a very long time ago. So I what I'm getting at is I think you're taking it very personal here for some reason. It's just if there's not very many numbers of that breed at a show, then they classify it as a minor breed. That is I'm not saying it's a correct term to use, but I believe that's how it evolved. How's that?
I think it's all bullshit. I don't think there's my first point on this is if it is a breed that is still in the, you know, species that it, whatever it is, whatever, you know, species we're talking about, and there's still a breed that is still thriving, then it can't be minor, because the only reason that breed is still in existence is it offers something to that particular species of livestock for it to still exist.
I think you're caught in yesteryear with the minor, I don't know if I want to use your term minor breeds, lesser bridge or less populated bridge. That's fine. I like your concept that they shouldn't exist if they don't contribute something. That makes sense, right? But I believe if you want to use the term minor breeds, let's use pigs, for example. The reason that Tamworths, Herefords, maybe you could even...
Why are you
even
hating on Tamworths?
I am using an example that some of those minor breeds at this point, for a long time, they've had no commercial relevance at all. And they've only existed
nothing in the stock show thing that has anything.
And they've only existed to participate in the minor breed divisions. That is why they existed. I'm with you. I'm not opposed to it or anything like that, but they're only around still because of show ring. I think because that some of them have been kept around, I don't believe there's any purity to hardly any of them, because I know what a pure Tamworth, a full blood Tamworth should look like, or what a full-blood Hereford should look like. And I can assure you, whatever you use for Reserve Grand in Michigan, I believe a Tamworth or a Hereford?
Mm-hmm.
Tamworth?
Michigan Tamworth.
I can promise you that is, if we were to go back in time and DNA that animal back to full-blood Tamworths, there may be none in there.
So you're making another very fabulous for me. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
I agree with you that basically... every breed, maybe not all, but the large majority of the breeds, minor, major, whatever, are crossed up. And so,
yes,
there's no pure anything left anymore. So this even makes
some crossed up more than others.
Right. But this makes my argument even more valid that why are we discriminating against minor breeds when there is no such thing as purebred anymore?
I wasn't discriminated against them.
Have you discriminate against them? You don't use them to win.
Shows. I believe I remember you and I judging in Mississippi, and I was wanting to use
because I did.
I think I fought for the mini.
Oh,
is that what I was fighting for, or something else?
No,
for
the mini.
I believe I was at that time.
I want to know how many shows you step out there by yourself, big dog, and you've used what's considered a minor breed to be Grand Reserve.
I don't remember.
None. Exactly.
Oh, if they're good enough, they're gonna get used. What is your definition? Let's go to the grand drive situation, okay? That's when we're usually talking about it, right? So they all get out there in the grand drive. We've discussed this before, and I just want to clarify, and we've talked about it.
In sheep, anything that's not black-faced.
Yes. So just use pigs for an example to make it easier. In your grand drive.
Bots.
Or cattle, we could use. Yours. Your determination and which one you want to use is which one is going to basically have the most success if they were shown at their junior national. I think you've used that example before.
The three criteria that go into me picking a Supreme are which one looks the very best that day, which one can I win the most shit with, and which one for their breed would do the very best at a national breed show. Because, okay, like take for instance dogs and horses. All dog shows and a lot of horse shows, all dog shows are judged based on the breed standard. How good is that dog compared to the standard of that breed? We don't do that in livestock shows at all. Zero.
We definitely do not adhere to a breed standard like, in theory, the dog judges do.
I think the dog
world may be more political than the stock show world, but they do pretend to adhere to a breed standard, I believe. Which at least there's a standard. At least there's a standard to adhere to. Do we have a breed standard?
No.
Judges adhere to? I think we have breed standards or classification criteria. I don't know if you want to call it.
Oh, yeah, you have classification criteria, but they still don't do it. But anyway.
For the breed itself, not just a show, but
right.
Just to be registered. Yep. That is interesting. So if you're saying that we determined by those three criteria, and I'm not going to argue those at all, but that how they would do at a national breed show or the junior national or whatever that is that not a bit of
which reverse? One for their breed is the best? Yes, that is a very important part for me.
That becomes reverse discrimination to a certain degree.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay. If all these breeds were to show is, say your Tamworth and your cross, your Herefords, whatever other breeds, your Berks, whatever ones you're using in the hog world, were to show just as, say they're all crosses and you throw them in there, are they going to beat those crosses in class? Would that Tamworth have beat them all in class?
I think the Tamworth would have been probably reserve cross, yes.
Okay, and then that one's justifiable. Are there times when a Tamworth would be really good in her breed?
I can guarantee you this much. That Tamworth gilt would have won the crossbred gilt show. I can promise you that under me.
Okay, where is it? Out east. You used a Scottish Highland not recently, a year ago or so.
That was like 2-3 years ago. Mini and a Scottish Highlander.
So if you were to throw them, into a crossbred or a commercial class.
No, the Scottish Highlander would not. No.
So that's my dilemma is how, okay, let's look at it this way. Would it cost, if your goal, you have a family come to you in the cattle world, wants to show a heifer and they want to win a junior national and they have X amount to spend. Is it going to cost them more to go out and try to purchase an animal to win the Angus Junior National or the Scottish Highland Junior National?
The Angus.
Is it going to cost them more to go out and win? In other words, is it more difficult to win what we call a major breed junior national?
Yes.
So if that is the case, you've got a really good Angus or Maine or whatever breed you want to talk about that's considered a major breed that may not be able to win the junior national, but still pretty darn good versus a Scottish Highland or a mini or something that maybe could win their junior national. To me, I would prefer to just look at general quality, but I think you're discriminating against animals that may be better that are major breeds just because they aren't the best in their major breed.
See, I think that's wrong.
I understand. I just think that is another perspective that we have to take into consideration, because out there in your grand drive, your minor breeds, if you're saying, well, which one's going to do the best at the junior national, it's easier for them to do that. I'm not saying there's not great minor breeds out there, but there's not as many individuals within the minor breed that are that good.
Mm-hmm.
Point taken that you have to have a better one to win a major breed, or it's more difficult. Maybe not, I shouldn't say a better one, more difficult is a better term. Political, yeah, all the above. It all comes into play. So that's just where I'm at. It's
you can, okay, your reverse racism deal is complete and total bullshit. Anyway,
use the best animal. Just be simple about it.
You cannot tell me that you do not believe, by and large, that the reason that the crossbreds in a steer show, in a pig show, or in a sheep show win 75% of the time? Would you say that?
Agreed. I think a little less now than, I think it was even more than that 10 years ago.
Okay. There's a whole lot to do with the fact that a lot of judges are like, oh, I'm supposed to use a crossbred.
I don't doubt there's that mentality out there in some judges, but I also think it's a matter of heterosis and genetics. They're in general easier to make.
They're all crossbreds.
They are all. I'm not at different levels, yes, but in general, it's easier to make crossbred look what we consider to be that ideal image than not. So I have a hard time with the grand drive in general. Let's use cattle as an example, and you this will be good for you to come through with an answer. If we're judging a market steer show, you get out there in your grand drive, or even when you're selecting in classes, we have an image in our mind of what we want that calf to look like. And you want them sound, you want them attractive, you want them muscular enough, all the things that we've talked about, and that's all great. Is there one certain type that fits all judges? No. And you've made the comment that it wouldn't be any fun. We'd just have one show and it'd be all over with. Is there one type that fits all the industry? All the packing plant grids. Can one
pop out that grid at every packing plant?
It's hard to judge without a scenario, without a justification or a purpose for that market animal saying it's going to Laura's Lean Beef Grid or going to a high-end restaurant grid. that you want quality grade versus some that just want cuttability and yield grade. If we take it back to the industry, there's every grid out there in the world, and we usually fit the cattle, or we take the cattle to whatever packing plant they're going to fit on that packing plant's grid the best. I don't know if there is one. Let's switch to cattle, and this would be an easy one for you. Your involvement in the eared cattle world, when we get out there to that grand drive, we've got every shape and size and different breeds represented. When we've got American cattle with the Angus, the Herefords, the Shorthorns, all of that, they all serve vastly different purposes. And if we look at the different environments across the U.S. alone and the different management styles, there is no way that one type of animal fits all those. So we're again going back to looking at them within their breed, but there's going to be biases because I want cattle that are going to fit in my operation where I have personal preferences. If we take some of these cattle, these ear cattle from South Texas to Minnesota, how are they going to get along? You tell me I can't even have them in Illinois.
Well, no, not in the winter, no.
I assume they wouldn't do well. I've never tried it. I'm sure people have. But I guess what I'm getting at is everything is so up when there is no, like the dog shows supposedly have a standard, the breed standard that they judge against.
They do. You can look it up on.
Yeah. No, I agree. What I'm saying is when we don't have something like that or a scenario or a standard or something to base everything off of, it is completely and total subjectivity by the judge that day. And I'm not arguing that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying this is how it is. And that's how we have gotten to where we are, that anything can win, literally. And I'm even a minor breed. I'm not okay, trying to
anything dish on can your, win, but they don't.
I understand your point. Minor breeds will not win as much as others, but I don't.
And the only reason that it's gotten better over the last 10 years is because a lot of shows pick a top five and there's only two crossbreds out there. So they can only be grand and reserve. That's the only reason it's gotten better.
I think that's made those breeds more marketable and popular and more numbers. Yeah. Better. No, I think that's correct. And then they're sliding into the top five and I get it. I just don't know that if we take this a set dollar amount, a kid's amount of time they want to work and effort they put into a project, should they be rewarded? One kid buys a crossbred gilt, one kid buys a Tamworth gilt, and they have those same resources, the Tamworth should get along better because it's not as competitive.
You're so high.
No, it seems right. Reverse discrimination is where it's at. And I'm not opposed. Use the best one. I don't know. That seems easy to me. If the Tamworth's the best one, use it. Recognize that it's probably not a true Tamworth, but it's a damn
good. You can say that shit, but you've never used one.
I don't know that I've ever had one that was good enough.
You cannot tell me out of all the shows you judge, there has not been a minor breed that was just as good as a crossbred, and you did not have nuts, and you used the crossbred.
No, I am sure that I've used them before. I don't remember it specifically, but I can assure you, I'm not avidly going out there trying to beat them, or am worried about what somebody's going to think about.
Avidly going out there to beat the crossbreds. That's not it.
You do not like crossbreds. No,
that's not true.
No.
I think it is wrong, and I think it's stupid that these breeds, regardless of, especially in the market shows. Now, in breeding female shows in sheep and cattle, I don't think it's nearly as bad. But in market shows, I think it is dumb that when you go to select a grand reserve, a top five, whatever it is, that the natural thing that most people do is like, okay, well, the crossbred's going to win and whatever.
But why have they assumed that?
I'm asking you why, but I'm telling you cannot, cannot tell me that's not the assumption.
No, I agree. That is usually this. Absolutely. They've assumed that because in general, the crossbreds have been better. And I'm not saying it's every case, but in general, a crossbred is easier to make, or you can make a better one than you can a pure, if you consider it animal for animal, not how they are within their breed.
I
think it's the opposite of what you're saying. I think right now the minor breeds get more consideration for what the how valuable they are within their breed. And I'm not opposed to it, but I think they're getting more consideration now for their value than they ever have in the past. And you had mentioned because of a top five, maybe that's it. I don't know. But I think I am
firmly convinced the only reason that more minor breeds are recognized in a grand champion drive situation type thing is because of a top five.
I think that's really boosted the minor breed's purpose in life, I guess, if the show ring is all that's left.
And also, like, we started this earlier and then we got off track, but like, for those people that are listening that don't know what I consider to be a minor breed, I will tell you, in sheep, it is anything that is not a blackface. In pigs, it's like Berks, Spots, Yorks, Tams, Herefords, basically anything that's not a crossbred or Hampshire, because hams aren't real hams anyway. At least. And in cattle, I mean, I think it depends on whether, I think cattle is a little trickier because of between breeding and market, because how many Angus steers have you seen make the top five at any show? Hardly any. But an Angus heifer is always in the top five. But so like for market cattle, anything that's not a key, a main, a crossbred, a Charlet, that's what I would, any other breeds, I would consider them to be minor. I think in heifers, it's way different, because like your Angus, your Hereford, those other breeds are probably considered the major breeds when semis, when, you know, the other ones are considered minor. So I think it's drastically different in cattle breeding and market.
Agreed. And especially with the Angus heifers getting along and the Angus steers not.
Exactly.
Yeah. You want to know why? I think it has something to do with muscle, lack thereof.
They're both flat.
But it's more accepted in heifer, obviously.
They're both flat.
Very flat. We're getting them. We're making them better. There's a change happening. We're putting a little more muscle in them. We're trying to make them better on their feet. It's not all about a freak neck and a swooping belly that's narrow and bad legged. We've advanced away from that now.
I just
make Angus great again.
Right. Good luck with that.
I think they're going that direction. It's just going to take a little while.
Oh, it's going to take more than a while. Anyway, but your reverse racism comment is bullshit. But
I think they get more of the benefit of the doubt now than they ever have.
Okay, but explain, you, Mr. Let's go back to the commercial industry and try to make all this relevant and stupid.
Not, and it doesn't have to go back to that. Just it'd be good to have some base, to a foundational base, so, to kind of lean back on a little
your
bit to give
only justification and your only argument for why crossbreds win
is because
way more than anything
they've been better.
Oh my god, you were
they crazy. Win because they're better. So all the judges over history are just wrong because they used crossbred. They just used crossbred because of crossbred.
I think there is equal parts they just use a crossbred because it's a crossbred. Yes, then that one being the best one. Yes, absolutely. I've watched it too many times.
Similar if we go way back in time, and I don't have the history as well as I should, but remember what was the first steer, crossbred steer, to win the international?
I have no clue.
Remember when it was a big deal when all of a sudden a crossbred steer wins when it always used to be purebreds? That is where it all started, wasn't it?
Well, they also were the size of, like, they came up to your knee. Back then,
some of them did. Yes, they did. But at one time,
all those pictures, the hay is like halfway up on their belly.
The straw,
whatever.
Weren't the Houston pictures always that way?
Yes.
Same. When did they change that? Were you involved in any of that?
No, sir.
But it wasn't that much before you. It lasted longer than I would have thought. It was like a traditional thing they kept a hold of.
Well.
I'm curious when they you remember seeing Houston steer pictures in deep straw?
No, right? There were the auctioneer that used to do Houston. I mean, I think he died before I ever started showing. But anyway, I can't even remember his name. But he there was this book that he put together of all the Houston champions that he like auctioned off or whatever, and it was called Sold, and it's in my mother's library. And
you think maybe you can sneak that out and let me look at that? Sometimes,
yeah, I will. I guarantee it's in there. Anyway, And anyway, he put this book together, and it's a picture of all of them. And like, it's insane. But I can't remember what that guy's name is or when he died. But I know it stopped in like the 70s. I think is when they quit doing that.
See, I would have thought I thought it went a little longer, but probably
maybe not. It did, but I can't remember.
I remember when I was in high school looking at Houston steer pictures, maybe not current ones, but I thought, wow, that those things just looked small frame, and I'm sure they were a little bit, but it was more so that they were in basically bedding straw that deep. So I think at one time. It was the opposite. Only purebreds were winning, and then we had that switch to where I believe it was Conoco maybe that won the international on the crossbred side, and that was a big deal. Oh my gosh, a judge went out and used a crossbred, and I don't know if the trend followed immediately after that. But there's no question. If you think back to when you were showing Ryan, wouldn't you say crossbreds were even winning more then than now?
No, I think it's the same.
See, I think that the minor breeds are getting looked at more serious now than ever when I can remember.
I don't believe.
Maybe because they've made them better. I do not know. And I'm with you, because we're maybe not completely pure. There's some out there that are darn good.
I firmly, and I think it is bad in cattle and sheep. I mean, I will say this, because like in hogs, I mean, nobody goes out there and use Berks and Tams and stuff like I do, because I think they're just as good, and I think they should be recognized for what they are. Granted, I know they're not all pure and all this other stuff. I get it. But like 80% of the hogs that are show are belted now. I mean, period. Whether they're in the Hamp or they're in the dark crossbred. I mean, blue butts are a minor breed and the crossbreds are a minor color, I should say. But and cattle, okay.
They've become fewer, where at one time it was all blue butt in the crossbred show.
Well, how I know, I'm getting a little off track here, but how you know that when I say there's not anything that's really purebred, you judge a registered Hampshire gilt compared to the stuff that's in the Hampshire market barras, it's not even remotely close to the same.
In the South, where you're classifying, in theory, where they're registered, it should be the same.
No, sorry.
I'm saying it should be, because if that animal tests back to its registration papers, I don't even know what percent pure they have to be at this point with the NSR, but a certain percentage, 85, 90, whatever it may be, in theory, they have to DNA back to. Talked about this before. All great. I'm not dishing on that at all. I think it's a good way to try to keep purity within the breed if we want to keep such. But I do question where they originated, where they pulled that original DNA to say, okay, here's the pure DNA profile of a Hampshire hog to compare back to. I just hope they got that right at that time. And I'm not sure that was possible. I'm not saying they didn't do a good job or didn't try. I just don't know if it's physically possible to get what we consider as a pure Hampshire DNA sequence to compare back to. So, but no, I agree with what you're saying, especially when you're, and I guess when you classify in the South, you're classifying gilts and barrows both, not just market hogs.
No, it's just market hogs. You have to have papers on that ones. But I'm just saying, if there is a huge difference in a yes. purebred registered Hampshire gilt and then what is showing in the Hampshire barrow side of things.
Well, in the Hampshire barrow side, that one doesn't get sold. It doesn't have to breed on. So throw whatever papers you want on it.
God. You're getting off.
They can get away with it easier is what I'm getting at.
Right.
It was
here's my point. How many times have you seen a white-faced sheep win?
I don't watch that many sheep shows. Not that doesn't happen very often. South, I okay. see all your Never. Getting, I see all those Never. fine wool crosses getting along well.
They don't beat the black. They don't beat the crossbred. They don't beat the medium wool. They don't beat the black faces. No,
sometimes. Sometimes.
No, they do not. No, they do not.
Okay, I pulled it up to make sure. I was curious on the time when Conoco won the international. It was 69.
Conoco.
That would have been the first crossbred steer. I'm not saying to win any show, but to win a major show.
Why was his name Conoco?
Did you work on this animal? No, but he's famous. Everybody knows about Conoco. If you were to look at him, I'm going to guess. I'm not saying he fits in perfectly now, but he was probably a 1,200 or 1,300 pounds. No, he was bigger than that. He was a 1,200 to 1,300 pound calf. He was a good steer. Even he doesn't win today, but by today's standards, fundamentally, still pretty darn good. I'll try to find a picture. Maybe that's what we'll use for a picture for this episode. Is Conoco.
You'll be dying in Africa, so we won't even have a graphic for this.
You and Holly are going to have to coordinate that. You're right. It may be a little bit of an issue, but no, it's just interesting to me, and it wouldn't even. I don't know that it relates because prior to Conoco winning and us using a lot of crossbreds, the Charolais, the Angus, the Herefords were always winning. I don't know. I don't think there was a Murray Gray or a Scottish Highland or a mini Herefords. Well, they're all minis. It was major breeds winning all the time, not minor breeds. And then all of a sudden the crossbreds started winning. I can assure you in the 90s, from the 90s forward, crossbreds won more than not. Probably even in the 80s, Ryan.
Oh, I
know you're 23, so you weren't alive, but.
No, you can go back in, whether I'm 23 or whatever, you can go back in history. And if you look at the typical history of steer shows, crossbreds, keys, mains, if you, a full blood key was one of those white things that was like 967 hands tall or whatever.
They're so very
like,
big.
But
very popular
not,
for a little while.
That's not right? what a key.
Little while.
There's never been a champion key in a steer look like that. So I
some of those old Sugar Rays and Eldinos, they were not white, but they were big, big cattle.
They still didn't look like purebred, full blood Italian full-blood. Key. But anyway,
you think those exist anymore?
I don't know.
See, if they came in now, you would call them a minor breed, and you would be obligated to use one of them.
I'm not obligated to do jack. I'm just saying, I think it is wrong, and I think it is bullshit that when you come to a grand drive, that in a lot of judges' minds, 75% of the lineup is, I'm not saying that they don't
not
consider
contenders
them.
In their mind. They block them out. I mean, and I'm not arguing that some judges do that, but I don't. It's not all judges.
Oh, it's more than it is more than it is.
Yes, it's more than
more
half.
Than. Yeah,
I give you that.
And I think that's bullshit.
And I'm not going to argue with you.
The reason I know this happens and I know this is bullshit is because I can't tell you the number of people, whether they love it or not, when I do use a Tamar, I do use a Burke or a mini Hereford. Like, 4 years ago, I used a mini Hereford steer to win an Iowa Jackpot steer show, and you would have thought that I had literally lit people on fire. So the reason I know that this happens is because of people's reaction to me using the stuff I do.
So that specific example, that is extreme, by the way. I mean, I understand. I'm sure it was a very, very
first thing I've ever seen in my life.
I am not arguing any of that. But if I go back to any basis, that one is hard because you're looking at a carcass weight of 200-300. I don't know what. But it doesn't the reason it may shock people is they're not maybe completely on board with you that it's just a show and we can use anything we want. But if they try to relate it in any manner back to the commercial world, it doesn't work. And I'm a huge Mini Hereford person fan. I love Mini Herefs, but a Mini Heref steer competing against the others, if you have any practical basis, doesn't work. You can fit into a niche market and a lightweight carcass freezer. You can justify it into any niche farmer's market freezer. There's ways you can justify it, but in the mainstream world, it doesn't work. And that is why they were shocked. I think it's easier to justify the females maybe than the steers.
Wise, anyway.
Lower maintenance cost, no feed. It works.
And like I said, you can say reverse racism. You can say whatever you want to. I the only thing that we have basically agreed on this whole thing is that you do agree that most judges rule out 75% of the champion lineup, regardless of species, when they come in there. And that is bullshit.
I don't know if it's 75%, but more than half.
It is bullshit.
And I can't get in their mind. So what? So is it not the judge's priority to, I mean, there, if there is, like you say, there is no commercial tie, there is no fundamental basis, they can do whatever they want. So what's wrong with them using, if they like, crossbreds or a major breed?
That, I'm not saying that it's wrong, but I'm also telling you that if you just look at the results, you cannot convince me that there is not discrimination on what, and like I said, it varies from breeding to market, species to species, even location, because for instance, they have Santa Gertrudis heifers at the Indiana State Fair, or they have at some point. I've seen banners with them or whatever in the open show. A Santa Gertrudis heifer in Indiana would be considered way more of a minor breed than it would here in Texas. And it's still considered a minor breed in Texas too, but it would be even more so up there. So look.
And if somebody were to use one of those, would it not seem a little odd?
That's what I'm saying. Location, all these things factor into what is truly considered a minor breed. I just find it appalling that people that are, and judging is just an opinion. You can use whatever the hell you want to. But like I have said, and I'm going to be done with this because you are being rude and trying to take up for these people. I think they are pussies because literally over half of the lineup is completely disqualified in their minds in the grand drive. I say it's more like 75%, but you're saying half. So I'll go there with you. That is, and again, dumb.
Only that some of the wrong judges, not all of the judges.
Large majority. Because I'm done with this. Because if what I'm saying is not true, why do people react the way they do when I use a minor breed to win something?
It is. Maybe because in general, they're not as good and they don't win very often. That could be a possibility. Jesus
Christ.
You know what? We have a friend of ours that we've brought on the podcast, your best buddy, Fugate. You know what? He has deep connections with the Cooney Cooney hog breed. Have you used a Cooney Cooney? Have you ever judged one? Cooney Cooney.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's a little bitty spotted up wild colored pig breed. You will see them in shows at some point. And you may be the first one to ever use one, I bet.
Well, there you go. He can get me to judge the Illinois State Fair and I'll use a Cumi Cumi or whatever it is. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
I think they had a Cooney Cooney show, but it was just online. I don't know if there's been a true Cooney Cooney sanctioned live show yet. Are we good with your reverse racism? Are we finished?
Yes, because you're lying, you're wrong, and you're defending people that are pussies. So yeah, I'm over it. Yeah,
okay. You've heard me talk about the original Phantom Halter, Begone Adhesive Remover, and BW Final Drive that assists with County Fair Premium Auctions. These products and services are brought to you by the Hunker Show family. This family is deeply rooted in the show stock industry. They get it. They live it. We appreciate their support of this podcast and the junior livestock industry. Visit phantomhalter.com for more information and use the coupon code BTR for a 10% discount on purchases. Roger and family, thank you for your support. It is time for question and answer. The first one comes to us from Thomas. Hey, Dale and Ryan, I have a question for Beyond the Ring. At what age/distance from show in pigs do you guys think it is appropriate to start changing feed, supplements, and protein amount? It depends if it's a Cooney Cooney or a Tamworth or a crossbred.
Distance from show?
Like how long before you show do you start changing?
Oh, I thought he was talking about like mileage.
I think it's how long before the show.
Oh, okay. It was like
feed, supplements, and protein amount.
I think a lot of it depends on the individual animal.
All of it depends on the individual animal.
we finally agree on something.
And if it's Fugate-like supplements that are nothing more than snake oil or something.
Why are you hating on the Fugate of it all?
He's out of country. He's in like Spain or somewhere. So we can get away with it today.
Oh.
Some Disney World tour. I don't know.
So we're not answering this man's question, but I do think there is no firm, definitive textbook answer for this. I think it all depends, the large majority is it's going to be on an individual animal analysis.
If you have one that a pig that needs more fat to look stouter, wider, whatever, then we're going to have to push a little more energy. If you need to lean them up, throw some paleo in there, pull back the energy in the diet, or there's a lot of it is 100% dependent on the actual pig. And I used to go back to when people would say, "Oh, I can't get my pig to eat. He's off feed or whatever." We've been feeding cake mix, we've been feeding eggs, we've been feeding everything in the world, sugar, powdered sugar, all kinds of things to keep them eating. And guess what? When you start using those flavor additives or something like a cake mix to sweeten the feed up, the more you use it, the more you have to put into that feed to keep them going on. You get to that point of no return where they no longer can just eat regular feed. So keep that in mind. More times than not, if I have a family call me and said, "Hey, we can't get this pig to eat. We're at a show." You know, it works the best in my experience in the past. If I go out and get the old school commercial sow ration, a 12% primarily corn, a little bit of soybean meal in it, and put some real feed in front of them, sometimes they go back and actually eat it. So Thomas, there is no good answer. I apologize for that, but it's all on an individual basis. Landon, I don't know if this is necessarily a question, Ryan, or a suggestion, but we're going to use it. Hope both of you are doing well. I love the podcast. The time you both give to the industry is amazing, and we can never thank you enough. I have a question or maybe a main topic. What is your species-specific daily routine, and what specific products do you recommend for each species? That would take multiple episodes.
I'm assuming he's talking about daily care?
I think so. Daily routine.
On like what all product? Oh, Jesus Christ. That would be like an episode each.
Yeah.
Multiple episodes each.
And maybe it'd be good. That would be a lot.
A whole lot. Well, it would take long at goats at all because Dale just doesn't wash them or teach them how to lead. He just
them and don't.
He just takes don't them work to the with show. Them. I've literally had somebody like gripe at me the most over your non whatever. I was like, well, I'm sorry. That's
really don't the truth. Don't wash your goats.
Yes.
Go ahead and wash the shit out of them. See how that works out for you.
I was like, well, sir, I hate to tell you, he's telling you the truth, and he was that dude was the most offended.
I had a family call me yesterday, really good family, cattle, original cattle family, and I'm going to offend people here, but Ryan, would you not say traditionally, not now, but if we go back in time 10 plus years, the cattle kids had to probably put a little more time into their projects to succeed than the other species?
I think it was the most labor intensive.
Yes. And I'm not saying it is today, but it's still pretty dang labor intensive. That this was a cattle family that called me, or originally a cattle family, and they're putting the kind of effort into their goats that they're showing now as they did their cattle, where they're working for multiple hours a day. And I can assure you, and this will cause some disruption out there, but there are some goats, because of their level of intelligence, that when they get tired of doing something every day, they will rebel and they will go from walking decent or showing decent to all of a sudden they're going to step out. They don't want it. They're going to hunker down. They're just tired of it. So that is a very fine line that I would never want to discourage a kid from working more. But in the goat world, there is a very fine line there that be careful, because sometimes they shut down on you. One of the most successful, best showmen that we've ever had feed for us had the theory she would go to jackpot shows, and very rarely would she work those animals in terms of setting him up or leading at home. Once she got him close to right, she left it alone and only did that at the show so they wouldn't turn on her and say, "I'm tired of this crap." So it exists. Maybe it'd be good, Landon. Good suggestion. The next one comes from Mike. We are experiencing longer days and temperatures are on the rise in Ohio. My kids show steers and the goal is to get along at our state fair in the heat of the summer. We have a cooler, but I'm always struggling on when to put in and turn out of the cooler and at what temperature to set the cooler to get the hair, but not cause them to crash in the heat once we get to state fair. I think that's a real issue and a challenging one. I think everybody's probably a little different, Ryan. Your thoughts? It doesn't get hot in Texas, though, does it?
It's only 117 degrees in the shade in Texas. But anyway, this guy's question is really interesting because I think my experience, and like I said, we all have coolers, or the large majority of people that are successful in Texas have coolers, and we go to shows that are, you know, triple degree heat, literally a lot. And it has been my experience that regardless of where you keep the temperature in the cooler, when you turn them out, when you put them back in there, all this other stuff, I'm going to go back to whether that animal crashes or not is a lot to do with that individual animal's, they all react differently. There are some, I can use an example. Many times we would go to a show and some that were not in the cooler would pant, break down, and fall apart easier than the ones that were in the cooler. If you see what I'm saying, I think it's individual animal specific again. I don't think there is, granted, if you have your cooler set at 20, then probably they're all going to fall apart when you take them out in 80 degree weather. But yeah, I think it's definitely individual animal specific on this as well.
And I think every feeder manager, broker, breeder is going to give you individual protocols that all vary. I think the common sense says we need to get them in the cooler before they're exposed to too much daylight, depending on whether you're on melatonin or not. I think that common sense tells you as we get closer to the show, we may want to bump the temperatures in that cooler up a little bit to have less of a shock from the cooler out to the real world. So it's that, Mike, that's a tough one.
Also, hold on a second. So he's talking about a state fair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, state fair, you're going to be there multiple days.
Yep.
So that animal is going to adapt before the show day, pretty much. Because
I mean, and I'm just going to use Illinois as an example. And we're down in a dungeon that's horribly hot. If it's
really it was not hot last year at all. I was there.
In general, horrible. So I mean, we've had steers come out of the cooler and we tried to acclimate and they struggled the entire time they're there. And there's always steers struggling there. Some adapt, some don't, but it's real in my mind. I mean, we're constantly trying to rinse or do anything to put ice packs on them, everything we can. And I think we probably get our cooler up to 50-ish prior to leaving for state fair, which I understand is still better than 90, but. Yeah, I don't know. I think Ryan's right. It's each individual animal is going to handle it differently, and we really have to try to adapt. But it's a struggle, absolute struggle. The other thing is, Ryan, what about how long can we, let's say, if we want to make sure they adapt, let's say they can adapt over 10 days or 7 days or whatever it is. Can we hold the hair that long if we were to pull them out of the cooler a week before state fair? I don't know. I think each individual would be different too. Your thoughts, Ryan?
They're all going to struggle a little bit coming right out of the cooler, but maybe our steers are just tougher down here in the South.
And maybe it's just that we've had bad experiences that I mean, ours definitely struggle. We get through it, but it's a struggle.
I am very, very serious on the fact that we have been through many a jackpot show where the steers that were not in, because steers that were not in a cooler took the heat way tougher than the ones that are. So, I mean, it just,
why would that that doesn't make sense. I'm not arguing with you, but it doesn't make any logic.
I agree. It doesn't make sense. But like, for instance, just like people, some people handle heat better than others. Some people handle cold better than others, all this other stuff. It's a lot of it is individual. It just is.
Agreed. But that Mike, I think there's a lot of people in your position wondering the same thing, and I just don't.
I think that your general rules there, get them in before sunlight, let them out after dark. And I have always told people, I think that people hurt themselves way more using a cooler by getting it so freaking cold that people think the colder you can get it, the better. I tend to go against that more than anything, just in a general, you know, synopsis.
And remember, what are we doing in the cooler? In my mind, you're blocking the sunlight or the light for the photo period, and you're making it a little bit cooler. We're trying to simulate that we're going into winter, so we'll grow hair in theory. So keep the basics in mind and realize that's what we're trying to do. And if it's pretty damn warm out, you don't have to have as big of a temperature change when they go in the cooler to make them think the season's changing. And the photo period will help with that as well. So very good. Minor breed.
Racism
revisited, not reverse racism, right?
I hate you.
Well, happy birthday, Ryan. I'm glad you got to talk about one of your favorite topics today. And you are now on the list to judge the Cooney Cooney National.
Yeah.
So that is a positive. Until next week, be safe.
Y'all come back now, you hear?